And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I am Martin Willis, your host. And we have a great one for you tonight. We have Ryan Sprague coming up. Alejandro Rojas is in bed with a sick tummy, so he's not going to be joining us for the news. However, I asked Jordan Bonaparte, who was a guest from back a little while ago. He runs his own show called The Nighttime Podcast. He's going to help out with the news tonight. How about that? So anyway, it should be a fun show. I want to thank everyone that does support the show. And if you're listening to this as a podcast, you can watch the show live. Tonight, for instance, is going to be video with Ryan. You can watch it every Wednesday night. The show is live. And you can watch the full show live for free. And that's at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's on our YouTube channel and also on podcastufo.com. There's a great chat room. And it will still play as a full podcast on Thursday nights on the Dark Matter Digital Network, and that's at 10 to midnight, and that's also Eastern Standard Time. And if you support the show, thank you so much. The show does cost several $100 a month, and any of the help you can give does help a lot. $2 a month or more, you can listen to the full shows, archives, plus the Everything Else show, which is also live on Mondays. This week, it will be live on Sunday with Steve Callahan. I'm going on location Sunday, and Steve Callahan and has nothing to do with UFOs, but on the Everything Else show. He is the longest soul survivor in a life raft and barely hung on for 76 days. An amazing story. He'll be on Sunday. I'll be live with him. So that's it for now, and welcome to the show. Helping out, thanks so much, Jordan.
Hey, Martin. Great to be here. I'm glad to fill in for Alejandro. He's got big shoes to fill, so I'll do the best I can.
That's fine. So, yeah, hopefully he'll be back next week. He'll be feeling better.
Yeah, it must be a pretty bad tummy ache, because if I recall correctly, I think you fell off of a two-story roof, and I don't believe you missed any shows.
Yes.
Just saying.
Well, thank you. I'll have to rub that in. Yes. Yeah, it was. I didn't really talk about that, but that was very hard sitting at this chair doing it. But anyway, I'm all better now, and I'm staying off ladders, staying off roofs, and I'm just waiting for winter to get over. We had some more snow. I think we had about a foot and a half in the last week or so, and I have just about had it. How's things up in Newfoundland?
Nova Scotia.
Oh, sorry, Nova Scotia.
Don't ever mix us up with the Newfoundlanders.
I know, boy. It's, that's about the worst thing I could do, isn't it?
That is. Now we got the same thing going on. It's although it's the first week of April, where, you know, spring is off to a great start. We got a foot and a half of snow about, and it's hasn't been much above freezing in the last week or two. So I'm ready for it to warm up indeed.
Yeah, yeah. And places in the country, in the U.S., are having some, you know, you hear about some record temperatures. That's where I want to go, wherever the record temperatures are.
Exactly.
For right now, anyway.
We just need an alien to abduct us and drop us off somewhere a little warmer.
That would be lightning fast, like, and not come back for a while. So you have a story you want to start out with?
Yeah, and this is a story, actually. I just came across my desk today. Somebody had emailed it to me asking if I had heard about this. I think this story's out of Brazil, and I think it's all just kind of breaking online kind of in the last day or two. And I will preface it by saying it's one of the stranger stories I've heard, and I haven't looked into it enough to know that for sure this is true and not some, you know, crazy hoax or something. Although a lot of reputable news sites are picking it up and starting to report on it, but the main reporting is out of Brazil and it's in Portuguese. So I've been throughout the day kind of collecting articles from Brazil and translating them and following the story. So basically, in essence, what it is it's a missing persons case of a 24-year-old guy. He's been missing since the 27th of March out of Brazil. His name is Bruno Borges. It's B-O-R-G-E-S. And now basically what had happened is his parents had been gone away for, I think it said, about 3 weeks. So parents gone about 3 weeks, and it was him and his sister and his brother staying alone at the parents' house. And while his parents were away, he took to basically locking his bedroom door and just staying in his bedroom pretty much the entire time. His brother and sister didn't think much of it because, again, he's 24, so he's, you know, free to have his privacy. Basically, when his parents got back, they went to check on him in his room, found the door locked, and when they got in there, what they found was instead of his bedroom, he kind of converted it to this kind of bizarre art space. Basically, he had writing all over the walls, the ceiling, the floor, and instead of a bed, he had moved everything out of his room, and all that was in his bedroom was a large statue of a philosopher named Giordano Bruno. And people have no idea how he got this statue into his bedroom. His brother and sister didn't see this happen. It must have been at night or while they were out or whatnot. But anyway, how this relates to the UFO phenomenon, which is he had spoke a lot about UFOs and, you know, related topics in the years leading up to this, at this point, still unexplained disappearance. But in the bedroom with all of his writing, he had actually 14 handwritten books that he had been working on over the last few years. They were all written in code, so people don't know exactly what they say at this point, although his parents believe they must hold a clue to his location, and they're working with code breakers to try to figure out what their son was writing about, if it is in fact a coherent code that can be broken. But within these books, there's lots of drawings of UFOs. There's also paintings that he made of himself standing with aliens. And you can see photos of all this stuff on the various online articles. And the books are quite striking looking because he had them all laid out on this table. And every book has, you know, it's like a white cover with a big red Roman numeral. So the books are numbered 1 through 14. So again, lots of spaceships, aliens, and odd illustrations. But what's the last little piece of this that's bizarre is I mentioned the philosopher's name is Giordano Bruno. That's the statue that was in his room. What's really strange is the missing person, if you look at his face and look at the philosopher, they almost look identical. And so what's happened online is some people believe that he may be the reincarnated philosopher himself who's continuing his work, because I guess this philosopher believes some pretty strange theological type things. So wow. That's what's going on today. Yeah. But I've been reading that story and it's quite incredible. I don't know if you're familiar with the lead mask case that happened in Brazil, which also may involve UFOs. It kind of reminds me a bit of that.
I'm wondering if, I would say that this is very possibly a self-perpetuated hoax. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing I think of when you're explaining all this. But it may, you know, who knows? I mean, this will be interesting to follow to see, you know, what comes out of it. First of all, if they find him, if he comes back, or any of that, you know, it's
just... A part of me also thinks the entire thing could be made up because it just reads like a sci-fi. You know, there's just the twists and turns in the short story are interesting. But even when you look at the photos that the Brazilian news have been sharing, even those photos look a little, a little too interesting, is how I'll put it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to, I have a couple stories that I'm going to go over that are from openminds.tv. You can check out the full stories there. And the first one is a rectangle-shaped UFO described over a California town. And this is Eureka, California. I've been up there a number of times when I was living in Northern California. and it happened February 9th. And there's some sketches that this person has done. You can see that when you go to Open Minds and check out the story. First of all, I heard like a very loud jet sound, like a commercial jet sound. And it was, except it was much louder, according to him. And he went outside. Now, this sounds like it's, you know, to me, I was thinking it must be, you know, possibly something experimental or something like that. And I don't know what, there's no real basis up in Northern California that I'm aware of in that area. But anyway, so he came out to look at what was making all that noise. And he saw this you know, square-shaped or rectangular-shaped thing up in the sky with all these lights blinking all over it. And he went and grabbed his binoculars and started to look up at it. And this is his quote: "I saw a very large square, or possibly home plate shaped object." Isn't that like a diamond? Isn't a home plate? Anyway, I perceived it to be fairly flat, and there were several orange lights on it, configured in sort of an arrow shape, and it had a red pulsing light in the center. Now, you always hear about these lights in the center of any, you know, like triangle craft, sometimes like the large amber lights in the center and all that. He said this is the second time that he's seen this type of object in the last year and a half. And this, again, is up in Eureka, California, and it's in Humboldt County. I thought it was kind of an interesting one. I'm not sure if you got to look at any of these.
I got the Open Minds article up as we're talking now. It's I do see what he, like, I'm looking, idea, like a rectangular shaped flying object is pretty cool. I don't know how, it seems as though they would be a little off with that shape, but definitely a cool sighting.
Yeah. You know, you do hear of strange shapes. You know, a friend of mine saw something that looked like a box, you know, I mean, that was an amazing sighting that he had. So, I mean, I like to hear the different shaped things and unusual ones instead of, you know, the standard triangles that seems like everybody's seeing.
But that's right.
Yeah. And so another one is a British witness videotapes UFOs off of Gosport, and this is in Great Britain. And so you can catch the video. He's filming it for quite a long time. The video itself is 4 minutes and 23 seconds long. And so he's very calm in the narration, and he thinks it's a UFO. It's definitely three lights, and they keep going off and on in kind of different shapes in the sky. Very much looks like a triangle. It's a pretty good video. I suggest anyone can go check that out on openminds.tv. So I think that's it. Jordan, I want to thank you so much for filling in. I really do appreciate it.
My pleasure. I look forward to listening to the rest of the show with you and Ryan.
All right. Yeah. You might as well jump in the chat room.
Will do. I'll see you there. Have a great show, Martin.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So our next guest, he's been on the show a few times, and great guy. Always enjoy him. He helped me out when I was out at my first live show out in Phoenix. He ran the camera for me, helped me out a lot, and it's always a lot of fun. Ryan Sprague, he's a professional playwright and screenwriter in New York City. And we're friends on Facebook. He has a very interesting life. I'm always seeing him doing kind of exciting things. And he has been interested in the UFO topic and has written a book, and we're going to be talking about that as well. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks so much for having me, man. It's always a pleasure. I've been a fan for so long. And like you said, it was a pleasure to finally meet you in Arizona. And, you know, the second we shook hands, it was immediately we started working together.
I know. I think I put you to work in 5 minutes, right?
It was awesome. You know, but that's what I do when I'm there. I've been volunteering at the UFO Congress for like 5 years now. And I love it, man. I love getting out of New York City for once. Yeah. And B, I just love meeting people and doing what I can to help anyone trying to research this topic. So,
yeah. I think we're having a little bit of a Skype issue. I'm hearing it just from the chat room. So we will have some questions from chat. You know, they'll come in. So can you talk a little bit? You've written a book on Richard Dolan Press that came out back in 2016. And it's up on the screen here somewhere in the skies. And what is the tagline for that? I think that was an interesting tagline you have.
Yeah, so it's a human approach to an alien phenomenon. And this came about early on in the writing process. I knew I wanted to write a book about UFOs, so I came to Dolan, the publisher, and I said, I want to write a book about UFOs. And he said, great, so does everyone else, you know? How can you make it different? And the more we narrowed in on it, I'm a playwright in New York, so my life has always been about characters, about how people tick, how they react, how they change, ultimately change. And I thought, why not try to, put my playwriting skills, as they were, into the UFO topic. So that's when I decided to focus on the having the experience, not so much the what, the when, the where, but the who and the why, and how a UFO sighting, a encounter, or even a possible claimed abduction experience, how it changes a person, what they believe it is, rather than the author or the researcher, and what we can learn from that ultimately. So that's where the tagline really came from, and what the focal point of the book really is.
Yeah, I think that's a number of people have touched on that a little bit, but nobody has really dove into it like you have. You know, it's kind of like, what is the reaction? What is the human part of this instead of, the human part of the whole equation type of thing? I want to read to the listener just a minute. I want to read the very first chapter of your book, because I thought that was a great way to start this book. UFOs are here whether we like it or not. The question isn't their existence. It's the intention of whatever lay at the source of the phenomena. The source remains a mystery, no matter what you may have heard, read, or seen. Anyone who says they have the complete answer to UFOs should be handled with a healthy skepticism. After all, it is a mystery that has baffled humanity for over 70 years since its modern inception. It remains the same today. But what if the most intriguing and the most important aspect of UFOs actually didn't lie in the answers at all? What if it relied in the questions? And I thought, wow, that is a great way to start a book, Ryan.
Well, thanks, man. It's hard with an introduction because you have all these grandiose ideas about what you're going to write about eventually. But then it changes the minute you start writing. So what I did is I saved that introduction for last, wrote the book, and then went back. What did I learn from the experience? What did I learn from the 2 years of research, of going out and meeting these people, spending time with them? And ultimately, what could we learn about the phenomena, not phenomenon? I do believe there is more than one thing going on here, one source, as it were. And ultimately, yeah, what we could learn from that. So thank you. I hope that came across. It was a little unclear in my head when I first wrote it, but the fact that it stuck with you, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now, have you just said something I thought was pretty interesting, and that is, I'm sorry, I'm having a little bit of technical problems here. Pardon me.
No worries.
Okay. Now I lost my train of thought. What you had meant about when the person gets involved in something like a UFO, are you also talking about their memories of the incident, how you can almost, possibly embellish what you're seeing and things like that? Is that the type of...
That's always an issue and a challenge that I've come across time and time again. You know, I had my own personal UFO sighting as a child, and while I could try to detail that the best I can now as an adult, I know for a fact that I don't remember everything that happened. I don't know the most minute details about what I saw, how far up it was, what time it was. Those are just things that change, and memory is faulty, yes. To be honest. It is extremely fallible, and I don't even think that it's really on purpose by the witness or the person having the experience. I think that's just the way it is. The embellishment aspect, yes, that can definitely happen. And I've had more than one individual come to me and try to relay the same story twice, and it's completely different. You know, they up the ante, as it were, each time. But for most witnesses and experiencers of the UFO phenomenon, I do think that they are genuine. They are sincere, and they're trying their best to recall it as best they can. And I can't fault them for that, because I've been in their shoes.
Yes, yeah. So when you were interviewing people, can you talk a little bit about that? I know I was looking at your conclusion because I didn't get a chance to read. You know, I got a chance to skim through your book. I've got like four books going at the same time here. So,
yeah.
But thanks so much for sending that along.
Of course.
In your conclusion about, you know, actually speaking to people, you kind of mentioned the fact that there's a real sense of earnesty there. But now you're saying that you've talked to someone twice and they, you know, I mean, it was a total different story. I'm sure that happens.
Yeah.
There are certain people, though, that have stuck to their story for many years, and you never hear a single variance, which you know, Travis Walton, for one, a number of people like that.
Absolutely. Travis is the prime example of a witness who has never swayed and has only learned, I think, from his memories. You know, his recent developments are that he believes he was saved by these beings, which is extremely interesting and intriguing, and it makes sense if you really sit down and think about it. In terms of the people I interviewed, hundreds of people within the 2-year span, I narrowed it down to a few dozen or so in the book, and those are the people I think are most credible. For the ones who I believe may have been delusional, or B, were just trying to up that ante and make it more extravagant or exotic. Those are the people that I didn't want in the book. I wanted the most credible individuals out there telling their story, sticking to it, and not being afraid to really own that, to embrace it. And all of the individuals in the book use their real names as well, which I made a pact at the beginning that if you were not going to use your real name, I didn't want the story. I wanted to put names to faces and faces to the stories. And if they were brave enough and courageous enough or possibly dumb enough to do that, then so be it. But they trusted me. I trusted them. And the journey of the book is so rewarding in as the writer and as someone who's also looking for answers as well.
Yes. Yeah. The part I love the part where you say that, you know, anyone that claims they have the answer, basically, you know, treat with skepticism, or, you know, I usually say run the other way, you know, and, you know, I always think that, you know, we probably haven't thought of exactly what is going on. You know, the fact is, like you say, there is something going on. And just what it is, you know, the big question mark, which, you know, keeps me on the show every week and the exploration of it. And before we forget, why don't you talk a little bit about the podcast that you do?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I've got two, actually. I host one with former Open Minds employees Maureen Ellsbury and Jason McClellan. That's UFO Mod Pod. That's a biweekly show. Yeah. And it's really a fresh approach to the whole UFO phenomenon, very much like what you're doing, and getting it out to an audience that doesn't necessarily always think about this topic like we do every single day, and making it accessible for them, steering them in the right direction. I think the younger generation interested in this topic, they don't know where to go. You know, they Google UFO and it's just endless garbage everywhere.
Yeah.
So if we can do our part at trying to relate to this younger generation who have lived with the internet since the day they were born, if we can steer them in the right direction, keep them focused, you know, and also let them look up at the sky every once in a while.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to go. So each other week, we cover a historical case, you know, try to bring them up to date on the Roswells, the Rendlesham's, the Cash Landrums, what have you. And so they know the history of the phenomenon, and then let's build upon that. What could it have been? What do we think it could have been? And then, you know, we bring on people like yourself. We bring on researchers, scientists. We had Peter Lavenda, the author of Mr. Tom DeLonge's recent book, very controversial, to say the least. But people like that who are speaking to the younger generation. So very exciting. Love doing it. And the other podcast is actually called Into the Fray. And that's hosted by Shannon LeGros and Sam Sheeran and myself. And every week we just come together, man, and we hash it out. Bigfoot, ghosts, UFOs, what have you. I was never really into that other stuff. I was always UFOs from the start. And it's great. I come in each week and I learn something new about topics that I never really thought about and could possibly be linked to the UFO phenomenon. So
yeah,
exciting, a little frustrating at times because we never find answers. But again, I think it's that journey that matters. So
yeah,
you can find those both on iTunes. So thank you.
yeah. No, I think it's really important to have like a liaison to the younger people. And the mistake that, you know, I possibly make on this show a number of times is I'll go right into a case like everybody's already knows about it, you know. And, you know, the young people or anyone who's just getting interested in it may not even know, you know, the iconic cases like Roswell. They may not even know, you know, they may have heard of Roswell. I think probably everybody has, most likely, but they may not know the details. So when I talk about a case, a lot of times on the show with someone, I'll act like everybody knows about it. And so it's a good idea to have something out there where something can be explained all the way through, you know, like it sounds like you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I agree with you. And it's a tough and it's a fine line because I think all of us, even the veterans out there who know the case history, who have been following these cases forever, there's always something new to glean. I found myself sometimes listening to your show, listening to various other podcasts and being like, oh, you know, I never knew that. You know, I talked to a researcher the other day about the Cache Landrum case, and he brought up something that I never even thought about. That could possibly explain that entire event. And it kind of blew my mind, to be honest.
Well, you're going to have to spill it now. What was it?
Well, this was, I don't think he'd care if I use his name. This was Micah Hanks, who I'm sure a lot of your listeners might be familiar with. And we were talking about the Cache Landrum case, a famous 1980 case, two older women and a young boy witnessed a diamond-shaped craft in the sky. They suffered physiological effects from this event, supposedly, and went on to sue the U.S. Air Force, who they believe were somehow involved in this quote-unquote UFO event. And very interesting case. There was supposedly Chinook helicopters in the area following this object. And recently it's come to my attention, as Micah told me, that this thing was actually emanating flames, and that it wasn't so much diamond-shaped. This was actually said by Colby, the young boy at the time. So right there, that ties back to the idea that that memory is fallible, that the women never really described this thing as being diamond-shaped. And this was something that came much, much later, decades later, by the young boy, who was, I believe, only 7 at the time when this event happened.
Yeah, I can't remember. He's been on the show. I had him on the show. A few years ago, I think he was 8, if I recall, but he might have been even younger because I remember he crawled underneath the dashboard when the whole event was happening.
Right.
You know, he remembers
right.
that part.
Right. So he remembers that part, and he has since come forward and said that it was diamond shaped. This has been said in many articles, been misconstrued. And I think now that's sort of what he's going with, is what everyone else told him it was, even though he was there.
Could very well be. Yeah.
You know, and so what Micah explained to me is that the way this thing was acting is it possibly could have been some sort of high tech, top secret balloon. It seemed to be floating. It seemed to have a hovering motion to it, and it was emanating flame and possible nuclear and or radiation. again, these women were exposed to this. They had radiation burns on their bodies afterward. So this was very interesting. It was a possible answer to this mystery that I'd been researching for years but never really thought about. So that's exciting when a case that happened that long ago can have new information come forward. And that was all by Kurt Collins, the gentleman.
Yes, Kurt's great. Yeah.
Runs Blurry Lines, excuse me.
Yeah.
So I definitely suggest people check out his website for the latest developments on that case.
So. Oh, wow. So I haven't talked to Kurt in a while. He helped me when I had Colby on. We had the three of us. It was Chris Lambright and Kurt right. Collins and Colby. We all did the show together, basically. It's a very interesting show. But so there is new developments. Now, it makes you wonder how a radiation, how a nuclear type of, they were testing some type of nuclear rocket or something. I mean, how did the radiation, how could that have some experimental thing, I guess, huh?
I think so. I mean, you look at the activity of why were they Chinook helicopters? We usually see these in rescue operations. I know they've been used in recent wars and whatnot. What were they doing? What were they carrying? Something? It almost ties back to the idea of the Kecksburg UFO incident, in my opinion, which also I believe was top secret military technology, with other aircraft in the area being seen. So you do have to wonder, why was it carrying something that had possible radiation effects over an area that was open to the public, over a highway, of all things? You do have to wonder, but the Air Force and the government has been known to do much dumber things. So.
You know, I right after Colby was on, someone emailed right away, and they said they had, you know, the 100% answer, and they said it, you know, it was and it was someone that's known in the field, basically, but in the more of the field of aviation. And they said, you know, this was, they sent me drawings and everything, and this is exactly what it was, you know, that type of thing, experimental craft, you know. But I, again, you know, someone that claims they have the exact answer, it's another could be. And I
absolutely,
yeah, pass that along to Kurt, and I don't know whatever happened to that. I also had someone that contacted me, pardon me, that saw that I had Colby on and read one of the articles that I had about the Cash Landrum case, and they said that they were actually a witness, and they were nearby in Texas and had a complete story. And I passed that along to Kurt Collins to see if he could investigate that and see how, you know, credible that supposed witness was. But he claims he saw the whole thing, you know, type of thing.
Well, there you go, man. I mean, we still have witnesses coming forward from the Bentwaters case as well, as you know, as soon as like a few months ago. So these cases are ongoing. We still have living witnesses, which I think is very important. But yeah, then you really do have to question, you know, why didn't they come forward sooner? What is their intention with coming forward now? These are questions we struggle with on a daily basis when speaking to witnesses. So yeah, that's exciting, though. I'd love to hear any developments with new witnesses to that case, because it's highly controversial, but it still remains one of the most interesting cases in UFO lore, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Lore, I like that. someone wanted to know what you thought about the Flatwoods Monster. Have you ever checked into that or read about that at all? That's a bizarre case.
Yeah, very bizarre. I actually just wrote about that incident not too long ago.
Oh, maybe that's why they asked. Yeah,
it's possible. Yeah, my memory is waning on when this happened, but I do know that it was an extremely strange case, and it harkens back to those old B sci-fi movie days. You
it
know,
does. Yeah.
Where 12-foot crashes
monster
in the woods.
And yeah.
12-foot monster. Exactly. You know, it was big, mechanical looking. It had like an ace of spades shaped head, glowing eyes. It hissed. And it was floating towards these witnesses who saw a object crash in the woods. They also described the area as being very misty and smelling like dank swamp. And when they left the area after this thing started coming towards them, they called the police. The police came to investigate, couldn't find anything. But they did find scorch marks in the farm area where this event occurred. The mist was still there. The smell was still in the air. And again, you had witnesses, both adults and children, who saw this thing. So you have to wonder, was it alien? Was it crypto-terrestrial? Or was it both?
Yeah, I know. It's another just weird case. And it's also a little bit, you know, I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, I actually had the guy Calvin on this show, and I'm just trying to remember that case when they looked like they had carrots growing out of their head. Are you familiar? You know what I mean in that one? It was a Calvin Parker. He was on the show. I just can't think of the name of the case right now. But that was just another real, real bizarre story, but a real credible one, a real interesting one. So,
there are some weird ones out there, man, for sure.
There really are. And, you know, I know this sounds really bizarre, but kind of the weirder, the more believable for me, you know?
I agree. You know, and that was actually a struggle with the book is I heard some weird stuff. I'm not going to lie. Very bizarre. And I could tell that witnesses and experiencers, there were things they were trying to keep from me because they thought I would think it was too strange. But again, when there's that much detail and things are that complex and weird, that's when I really think there's something to it. Yeah. These things aren't as cut and dry as we think. It's not a prototypical wake up. There's a gray alien there. It brings you up. It experiments on you. It puts you back. There are many holes and gaps to fill in those types of experiences, which some people use hypnotherapy or regression to try to unravel. And others remember it all. And it is. It's strange. It's muddy. It's murky. And I think we're only starting to scratch the surface. Very weird, very bizarre. And again, like you said, I think that's what makes the genuine stories really stand out, is the weirder, the better, in my opinion.
You know, there was a friend of mine who's on the Antiques Roadshow. He will never come out publicly. But I said earlier, talked about this person that mentioned a UFO as a box. Now, I've told this story a couple of times on past shows, so forgive the longtime listener. But he was at Amherst College in Massachusetts. And he was on like the 15th floor of the dormitory. It's a real, they have like these towers there. And this like box-like thing came flying into like the mall right in between the buildings and just sat there, and it was blinking lights on it. Mm-hmm. And he said, they were all staring out the window. He said, yes, they had a couple of drinks, but they weren't bombed, you know. And he said, all of a sudden, it shot up in the air, and they could still see it, like, toward the mountains. And it was just standing there, and they heard jets coming, and then it burst into five lights. The thing just changed into five lights, and then the lights started blinking, and the jet, I can't remember what he said, came toward it, and as soon as it got near it, the thing just shot off. He said, faster than you can believe. And so the funniest part about the story, or the most interesting part of the story, I go, oh, my God, because he found out I did a show on UFOs. And so he said, yeah, I had it. Yeah, he was real casual about it. And then I said, so didn't that change your life about everything, you know, just seeing something like that? And he goes, I could give a you know what. He said, I don't even think about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
What an interesting reaction. You know, and I've run into that many times where someone has what I would consider a profound experience, a life-changing experience, and they just brush it off, you know? And like, it, not that it never happened, but that like, oh, that was interesting, and move on with their life. I have many of the people in the book, they told the story to me, but that's kind of as far as it went. They're like, oh, that's weird, you know? I got to go to work tomorrow. So what? You know, I got to pay the bills. So yeah, you got to wonder. You got to wonder. And I think it's the individual, again, that matters most and how they react to that and how it impacts their lives. Some of them embrace it and then some of them deny it. Many of the individuals that I've spoken to, they they were changed in many ways, spiritually, emotionally, religiously. Some became artists after they had their mind or their awareness opened up. One gentleman had an orb sighting in a body of water behind his home. And after this event, he started painting, and he would paint all these very intricate geometrical shapes. And this was something he'd never done before. So you got to wonder, did this have anything to do with the UFO sighting, or was just a hobby he took up out of nowhere impulsively, or was his awareness opened up after this event? It's a connection I made with the individuals, not all, but some of them. And you have to wonder. And I think that's something we have to dig deeper into for sure.
Right. Well, you look at the Allagash abduction case, you know, Allagash Maine. And Charles Foltz, Jim and Jack Weiner, and I can't remember the fourth one, but they're all artists, and their art completely changed after that event. All their work completely changed, and one was doing similar to what you're talking about, sort of like what's called cubism, where there's geometric forms and things like that. And then Jack Weiner actually became brilliant with numbers to the point where he started to work, you know, on the space program, you know, and someone that had not really dove too much into numbers itself and math. He just became brilliant with numbers. And, you know, that's fascinating to me. One of the iconic cases as well.
Absolutely. That's a prime example of it, I'd say, for sure.
Yeah. And the reaction that they have and the continuing, you know, you hear about a case like that and you just think, wow, that was such a mind blower. And here I am starting in the middle of the story for the listener that's not aware of the Allagash case. Four guys went up into Maine. They're on a lake. They saw, this is in a nutshell, they saw a light off into the lake when they were looking for someone that was lost, basically out in a canoe. There was other witnesses that saw it too. And like, huh, that's weird. And so then they went out at night. They lit a big fire, went out at night, out into the middle of the lake to go fishing. And they saw the light again. It came closer to him. And Charlie Foltz, instead of, I asked him why he did this, but he flashed his flashlight at it. And as soon as he did, it shot right over to them. And supposedly a beam came down. And that's all they had remembered for years. Until, you know, they started having bad dreams and the memories started coming back to all of them, you know. But their lives had totally changed from that point on, not realizing what it was about, basically. It's a great story. Anyone out there that hasn't looked into it, just look at the Allagash incident up in Maine. It's a really great story.
I love that story. And I believe I saw Chuck live at the UFO Congress.
Yes, that's right. Nice guy.
That event.
Nice guy.
Such a nice, genuine individual,
yes.
I might add.
Yeah.
I believe these men. I honestly do. You know, I know there's controversy with the case, as there always is with abduction cases. There always will be.
Yeah.
But I think it's that change that matters. If you don't mind, there's one other gentleman I spoke to, Michael Carter, a gentleman here in New York City, actually, where I live, originally from New York City. He had an abduction experience as a when he was in his 20s, and they kept reoccurring. These small chalk-colored beings kept visiting him in his home. So he wasn't being brought up into a craft that he knows of, but he remembers the room turning very cold. The temperature would drop. He would hear sounds from outside, inside the bedroom. So very interesting. But what happened was, during one of his experiences, he saw an image of a lightning bolt with prayer hands, and the lightning bolt was sort of going through them. Now, Michael took this as a sign, as some sort of symbol, and he started to do healing, energy healing. He was never that kind of person. This was a dude who grew up in Harlem in New York City, very tough African-American guy who has dealt with so much throughout his life. Mystical New Age stuff was not his thing, but he started doing this afterwards. But not only that, he took the prayer hands and became very spiritual. And eventually he moved out of the city and opened his own congregation down in the South, a Universalist Unitarian church, I believe. So right there, Martin, you have a possible abduction experiences that completely altered the path of one man's life. Wow. He told me, he said, I was agnostic, never believed in God. After these events, not only did I start believing in a higher power, but I then intrinsically linked my experiences into my spirituality. So very intriguing. He grappled with that for a while of, you know, if there is a God out there, is he letting these experiences happen to me, these others? Very intriguing. I continue to talk to him today. He continues to preach to his church, and he's written a few books about UFOs and the Bible. Yeah. So that's a rabbit hole that I have a lot of contention with, but good for him and all the yeah. power to him. He's found a way to bridge that gap, and that's very interesting, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, you think about the toll it takes on people's lives, you know, the stress of at least the people that are claiming experiences, you know, abduction experiences. You know, I mean, I've said this before in the show, if something like that was actually happening to me, I don't know how I'd ever deal with it. If something that I could actually believe was totally happening to me like that, nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you go on day to day? Just yeah. like your coffee would taste different.
Yeah.
The people in front of you, everything, in my opinion, would change. I can't even imagine. And again, I think it really comes down to the individual and what they take from it.
Yeah, yeah. How they can handle it. Everyone handles things differently. You know. Someone, yep. A question here in the forum. Could you relate the experience of Scott, who was at a drive-in theater when a UFO passed over it? Pardon me, did he remember this experience right away, or did something trigger his memory later?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so this person definitely read the book. Uh-huh. This is a gentleman named Scott Santa. He is a former MUFON field investigator and also a retired radioman, first class for the Coast Guard. And he came to me early on in my research. He never really talked about this incident often, but he'd been listening to podcasts I'd done, articles I did, and he reached out to me. And I was so happy that he did, because this is one of the most interesting UFO sightings I've come across, Martin. This happened back in 1974 in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. And Scott was going to a drive-in movie theater with a good friend of his. And it was some sort of double feature for the night, horror movie or whatever. And they just wanted to go have a good time, have some drinks, maybe meet some girls, he told me. And so they pull into the driveway. Movie hasn't started. And he goes to the refreshment stand, get some popcorn, and he's making his way back. And he notices there's these children in the driveway area playing, and they're staring up, you know, towards the movie screen. So he's wondering what they're looking at, and the movie hasn't started yet. And he looks above the movie screen, and there's just this huge, massive, chevron-shaped black object hovering over the movie screen. So, you know, what is this? He gets back into the car to tell his friend to come and see, like, is this, am I seeing things? What's going on here? The friend sees it, and then the thing starts coasting over the drive-in theater. And I remember Scott telling me from tip to tip, it covered the entire drive-in. So this thing was just massive. It was completely silent. He saw no sort of disturbing metal or you know, anything like that. It was just solid black like mass. And everyone starts freaking out. They get into their cars, and they try to start their cars to go, and nobody's cars would start. And we've heard this a
typical.
Lot.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. No one's cars would start. Not only that, all the power in the drive-in theater just shut off at this point. So then they can't even, like, see the thing anymore. Everyone's terrified. But then there was this one moment that Scott remembers that everyone in the drive-in just stared up and it was silent. He couldn't hear anything. And they all just stared up in awe as it floated over them. He remembers feeling like a weird vibration throughout his body.
Ah, really?
Then it, yeah.
Yeah, we'll like talk about that in a second. Yeah, but keep going.
Definitely. And he remembers it starting to go off into the distance, into a field, and then everything's back to normal. Lights come on. Cars start. People start to get out of this daze. But what... The next part is what really captured my attention. Scott says that after this happened, he went to use the bathroom and nobody was talking about what just happened. Not a single person. As if they didn't even remember it having just happened. Now, again, was this missing time? Was this some sort of instant amnesia? But Scott goes back to the car after he uses the restroom. They watch the entire movie and they go home as if none of this ever happened.
Yeah.
He didn't remember any of it that night. I think it was a few years later, almost a decade later, he sees a book by Edward Ruppelt in the library about UFOs and boom, that was his trigger. All the memories started flooding in of what happened that night. And it terrified him that all these memories just came out of nowhere. And he searched for the friend a decade later, couldn't find him, had no idea where the guy ended up in life. And to this day, Scott has no idea what happened, except that whatever it was, he believes it had complete control over everyone that saw it that night. But not only that, he believes that whatever it was, clearly it wanted to be seen and wanted to evoke some sort of reaction out of the individual seeing the object. It was so massive. It was begging to be witnessed. And then it also seemed to be in control. So I don't know, man. This is a great one will stay with me and that I continue to try to unravel with him. You know, I've reached out to locals in that area. Drive-in theater is gone at this point, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, you're lucky to find any of those in America anymore.
Yeah.
And just trying to find anything I can on this event so that there's at least one more witness to corroborate this story. I do believe him. I think that's a lot of pressure on one man to come forward with this event with having no one else, even though there were supposedly dozens and dozens of people there to talk about it. So, yeah, fascinating.
That's great. And, you know, there's a lot of cases that I've heard where people do not remember or don't even talk about it. You know, a friend of mine that's in the antique business stumbled across my site that had a major sighting of this thing right over the head of when he was 17 and his buddies walking down the street. And they were scared to look up at it anymore. And, you know, they felt like something, they felt a presence as well. And then, you know, it was basically gone, never talked about it again, like it never happened. A past listener to the show told me about her story in Australia of a triangle going over her and her feeling like a pressure down and like a vibration type feeling, you know, interesting.
Very interesting. And we hear that a lot with these triangles.
Yeah.
Whatever type of propulsion they seem to use could be electromagnetic, could be some sort of free energy that we've yet to even really scratch the surface of. But it does seem to have some sort of physiological effect on those below it. I had my personal sighting, which I think we spoke about early on a different interview. I had a triangular sighting as a child, and I had that same feeling, this weird vibration in the back of my ears that went down the back of my neck into my chest. Like, all I can relate it to is like an amp at a concert. Right up against that and it's vibrating. That's what I could feel. Now, whether that was just pure adrenaline and fear of what I was seeing, I don't know. But we do hear this a lot with these delta-shaped, these chevron-shaped or triangular crafts. So you do have to wonder.
Right. I want to say a shout-out to the Beat family in Birmingham, England. They listen, the whole family listens to all my shows over there, and I just want to say hello and thanks for listening. It's just something I remembered to say.
Hi, guys. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And so, yeah, that is an incredible story. And, you know, so many stories I've heard, though, are similar in the way that the people, the witnesses, don't talk about it afterwards. I mean, it just is. Even the Allagash case we were talking about earlier, they never spoke about the whole incident. They can't, you know, they just wouldn't talk about it, you know, at first, you know, until 10 years later. Another friend of mine in Canada had a disc fly over with two jets. They heard the afterburners, and the jets were flying over chasing it. And everyone there at the party, same thing. They didn't talk about it, and he brought it up to a few people a few days later, and they didn't remember it.
You know? Right. Well, I think it really is just a modge podge of both the ridicule factor,
yes.
First of all.
Yes, could be. Yeah.
And or some sort of intelligence agency or military program silencing people. You know, I mean, that seems very surface level and cliche to say, but between these two, with the whole ridicule factor of coming forward with the UFO event, we know Stanton Friedman's whole thing about, you know, asking people how many people have seen a UFO. You know, 95% yeah. of people raise their hands. How many reported it? What, 10% yeah. raised their hands? Yeah. People don't know where to go. They don't know about MUFON. They don't know about the National UFO Reporting Center.
I didn't have a clue myself, you know, in 2006 when I had my sighting. It never occurred to me that there was an online way to report a sighting.
Exactly.
I thought I have to call someone.
Yeah, and then who do you call? You know, you call your local law enforcement, and they're going to hang up on you.
That's about what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, or even the local, you know, FAA or what have you. Mm. It's death for any of them to get involved with a UFO incident, you know. You look at, like, something like the Japan Airlines case.
Yes.
Where a pilot had a UFO sighting, reported it. He's put on desk duty.
Yeah.
A couple months later, you know.
He actually lost his job for a while, and Richard Haynes actually fought for his job and got it back, which is part of the story I had never heard of before.
Me either. That's amazing. I didn't know that either. Tadahuchi, I believe, was his name.
Yeah, something like that.
A gentleman. Yeah. Yeah.
And a seasoned 30-year pilot, or 20-some-odd-year pilot. Unbelievable.
Exactly. And for him to come forward and recall this event and not know what it was... that says a lot, and that comes a lot with pilots. You know, I spoke to a few pilots in the book as well who had sightings, and
those were always good to me. So why don't you bring up one of the cases? I want to hear about that.
Yeah, sure. One of them was out of South Carolina, where a gentleman named Gary Travis had what I call the Foo Fighter syndrome. He saw these orange orbs as he was flying. He's a civilian pilot. And owns his own plane, goes up whenever he wants. He takes these incredible GoPro videos. I'll have to send you a link to those. Didn't have it on the day of the UFO sighting, of course, but he remembers these orbs coming around his plane, surrounding it above, below, and to the sides, and just following him. His instrumentation was definitely affected at this point. Things started going all over. Things started beeping, blinking, everything you can think of. Nightmare scenario of being in the air and having these things happen. And he remembers trying to outmaneuver them. He couldn't do it. And then finally, they all just darted off and left. Everything went back to normal. He'd never had an experience like this before. And never even thought about the UFO topic. And now he's one of us, man. He's in the fold. He's looking at reports from all over. He's speaking to other pilots and trying to get them to come forward with their sightings. So I think the more pilots who are willing to come forward, the more that ridicule factor is going to be stripped from that profession. And we're going to get some of the most credible reports that we possibly can. From pilots, people are trained to know what the heck is up in the sky and still can't explain what they're seeing. It's frustrating, but it's also extremely compelling that so many pilots have seen these things in the air.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I have a few friends that are commercial pilots, and I've brought the topic up to them, and supposedly I'm going to get connected to someone that had a major sighting. And I don't know the details at all, but I hope that does happen. I'd love to actually interview someone like that. How did you find these people that you interviewed, like the pilots?
A lot of this was done, I will admit, through social networking. One thing that I love it for. It's a gift and a curse, but I did reach out to many UFO Facebook groups, support groups for the experiencers, and was able to find people who were willing to come forward. Others reached out to me. You know, every day when I put these messages up on you know, the internet or in forums or whatnot, I'd start getting emails flooding in about people who wanted to come forward. And again, then it comes down to who's the most credible. And who do I think will put a credible face to the topic? So I wanted to speak to your everyday people, professors, law enforcement, pilots, religious people, and they're all in the book. You know, everything down to, you know, the worker at the grocery store. These are everyday people having these extraordinary experiences.
Okay, that's it for the free part of the show. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Erica Lukes. We're going to be talking about the Skinwalker Ranch and more. So remember, you can support the show, listen to the entire shows and archives for only $2 or more per month. You can always watch the full show live on Wednesday evenings as well. And that's on podcastufo.com. All right, so we'll see you next week, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.